Okay, I think I can start this morning's talk now in this progression of talks on meditation. And yesterday I started talking about the meditation on the breathing. And again, to sum up so far, learning how to relax the body, to get the body into a fit state, at the same time developing these skills of awareness and letting go. And then taking that to the mind, so the mind gets stable and still enough that most of the problems to watching the breath, such as thinking, past and future, they're all dealt with before you even watch the breath. So there's only a little bit of thinking, the power is reduced of thought. So that also that the mindfulness now becomes much stronger, so you can become much more aware of the inner world. And at the same time, there's a little bit more happiness there, so you can watch a simple object, such as the breath, without having to force the mind, because the breath starts to appear delightful. And that's basically as far as I got so far in this series of talks on meditation. And I'm trying to get these talks in line with your experience, so that little by little, as you go further into this retreat, as you get more experience, more problems, I can address them as we go along. So when it comes to the watching of the breathing, we start to watch the breath. I also did mention an interesting thing which helps people a lot, is to do a little mantra with the breath, you know, breathing in peace, breathing out, let go. That is also really helpful because it does encourage a perception of peace and it does help you let go more. These are wonderful things which we get very aware of, and they're some of the major things in meditation to do. Being in peace, that's called letting it be, and obviously letting go of all this controlling, doing stuff, making things happen. Because it is, so when we really let things be, that all these things happen by themselves. I also mentioned, and I'm going to go back to this, about the experience of watching the wall and seeing the wall vanish and disappear. The idea that through stillness things vanish. And so here I'm going to bring up one of my favorite similes. I'm not going to spend the whole talk on this simile. It is a simile of the thousand-petaled lotus. The lotus closes up at night time. So all the leaves, the petals are all closed. And when the first warmth and light of the sun hit that lotus in the early morning, it warms up the outermost petal of the lotus, and that opens out. And that reveals the next layer of petals, so they can receive the light and the warmth, so that opens up. So the next layer of petals can receive the light and the warmth, so that can open up. It opens up layer by layer by layer, because of the light and the warmth of the sun. And the deeper you get into the lotus, the more beautiful are the petals, the more fragrant, also the more subtle, the thinner they are. But the next layer of petals is always right inside the layer of petals you're watching now, and your job is just to allow the warmth and the sun keep warming up those petals long enough for them to open up naturally to reveal what's inside of them. That is how the lotus opens up. And that's a very helpful simile because obviously that lotus is you. And sometimes if you ever see a lotus pond and you see the lotuses all just closed up, if you didn't know what a lotus was, you'd never expect that deep inside that lotus was the most beautiful, fragrant, colorful petals, because the outer leaf is all rough. Corrugated, and just takes the dust. There's no fragrance there at all. It's thick and coarse. The outermost petal of the lotus, because that has to protect what's inside. And I liken that to you guys, all rough and thick and hard. But that's only the outermost shell. You go inside, there's incredible beauty inside that lotus. Now, I often love that little simile at this particular point because sometimes people come to this retreat center and sometimes the most unlikely candidates, you look at them and say, no way is that person going to ever sort of open themselves out and just get into deep meditation. But they do. Because inside every lotus, there's the most beautiful petals. You go to teach people in prison. Rough on the outside, but inside is the most beautiful fragrant petals. Or like the guy, I think it must be a couple of years ago now. This fellow, he came to this retreat, which I was talking. And when he registered, I looked, took one look at him. He was about 6'3" or 6'4", covered with tattoos, a beard. And just, I make big mistakes. I judged him. I said, are you in the right place? You know, the prison farm is up the road there if you want to visit your friends. I was crazy. And he said, no, I'm on a retreat. I said, oh, okay. It wasn't the sort of person, you know, that you'd expect to come on a Buddhist meditation retreat. He really looked like he belonged in some Hell's Angels gang. That's what he looked like on the outside. But, you know, he meditated. He seemed to be doing well. And he blew my mind when he came to an interview. He said, I had a really beautiful experience in meditation. What was it? Describe it. And I know what I'm talking about, and I know all the things which I don't tell you. And he told me them. He got into a jhana. And that really blew my mind, because he was the last person I would have expected on that retreat to get into a jhana. And he did it. And that just taught me a big lesson. Every lotus has those jhanas inside of them, has Soan, has full enlightenment, has it inside of you. You have it inside of you right now. Your job is to open it out. You can't use that by force. So first of all, that should give you a lot of confidence and faith. Inside every lotus is the most beautiful, fragrant, profound of petals. Inside every lotus, even the ones you least expect. And how do you open up that lotus? Warmth of the sun, light of the sun. The warmth is called kindness. The light is mindfulness, what I call kindfulness. That's what opens you out. And that's what you've been doing so far. Sometimes people think, well, I've not been doing anything, I've just been aware and just let things be kind, make peace, be kind, be gentle, but I'm not doing anything. How can a lotus open up when I don't peel it open? If you peel it open, you destroy it. But you've probably found, I hope by now, that when you practice some kindness, some letting be, and some awareness, things do settle down. Progress is made. Your body relaxes. That's why I keep stressing that, because that's something you can all experience. You let go and the body relaxes. And it feels more healthy. Yeah, you may still have some aches and pains in there, but they're less when you learn how to relax. You relax the mind. You don't try and focus it, concentrate it, you just relax it, and then it gets peaceful. What's happening is you're going inside. First of all, inside your body. Then inside your mind. And in the mind, when you're first aware of it, past, future thinking, you're not trying to get rid of those things. You're trying to go inside them, into their center. Just with mindfulness and kindness, the lotus petals open out and you're in the present moment. You're here. Because it's right in the center of time. And there you are watching the present moment. And soon, just with mindfulness and kindness, soon, as I said yesterday, the mind opens out and you're aware of your breathing. Because that breath is right inside the silent mind. You don't push this stage away. Okay, I've got, say, present moment awareness now. Push that aside. Now I'm going to watch the breath. You don't push the breath aside. Now I'm going to watch the nimitta. You don't push nimitta aside. Now I'm going to do the jhanas. You don't put samatha aside. Now I'm going to do vipassana. That is just such a wrong teaching. You don't push anything aside. Like the lotus, you always go inside where you are right now. And that is the best part of that simile. It shows you what progress is and how progress, if you want to use that word, is achieved. By just making peace, in other words, being kind, and by being aware, The mind naturally goes deeper and deeper inside. The lotus opens up in its own time. You can't rush it. You just have to let it happen, knowing that those lotuses will open up eventually. So I got to the stage of just watching the breath. So that's all you do. Keep the mindfulness and this letting be, this kindness, on that breath and do nothing else. And just be patient. And with patience, there are two types of patience. Obviously, the right patience and the wrong patience. And I'll do the wrong one first of all. And the wrong type of patience is waiting for something to happen. I call that waiting in the future. And many of you already said, Ajahn Brahm, I've been following your instructions. Nothing's happened yet. Why? Because you've been waiting in the future. Waiting for something to happen. Waiting for the thoughts to disappear. Waiting for the breath to come up. Waiting for lights to come up. Waiting for something to happen. And if that's what you're doing, that is not real patience and waiting. Real waiting is waiting in the present moment. Just being here. Not sending your mind off to the next moment. When's it going to happen? When's it? I know it's going to happen. Ajahn Brahm said it's going to happen. It's going to happen. And it never does. Always waiting in the future. That is one of the big hindrances. So we wait in the present moment. Now we're just here. Making sure that we're being aware and being kind to whatever we're experiencing. And this is a brilliant teaching. It doesn't matter what state of mind you're in, what hindrance, what thought, what craziness you're experiencing. Be aware and be kind. That's all. Such a simple teaching. I have to keep on reinforcing it. Just be aware, be kind. And then you go inside of things. The mind just goes in because it opens up. If you've got crazy thoughts, just be mindful, be kind. You tend to go into the center of those thoughts. And the thoughts just fall off the screen. You're silent, you're peaceful, you have even great pain. If ever you unfortunate enough to have really unendurable pain, go right into the center of it. That's the only way you'll find any freedom. And you'll find in the center of this, the worst pain is a lot of peace and stillness. You go inside. You don't try and escape. Inside. It's a tough thing to do, but my goodness, it works. So you go inside everything. So at the stage of watching the breath, you're watching the breath go in, go out, go in, go out. Don't think, is this it? Nothing's happening. You're waiting in the future. Just be in this moment. Okay, this breath right now. All I need to do is to be aware and just be kind. And the kindness is an important part of the breath meditation. If you have no kindness, you can be aware of the breath, but it never really engages with the breath. You have to use some force, and after a while, the breath vanishes. So it's wonderful to develop some kindness, especially towards the breath in that stage of the meditation. And if you find it hard to meditate with kindness, you may see these meditation accessories which we have in China Grove, which are on my left, the teddy bears. Now many of you may have been wondering, what on earth are these teddy bears doing in a meditation center? And I am now going to explain it to you. We call this bear awareness. Teddy bear meditation. So, people thought, they think that this is ridiculous stuff, but it works. The next time you meditate, put the teddy bear in your lap, cuddle it, whatever way you put your hands, and now start to meditate with this beautiful, soft, cuddly teddy bear in your lap. Straight away it brings back these childhood memories of kindness, softness, love, beauty, whatever it is. And you find that then when you start to meditate, the missing ingredient which most people don't have, the kindness, compassion, is right there. And your meditation gets so much more joyful, so much easier, so much deeper, adding the kindness. And to prove that, you give it a try, and you'll find probably by tomorrow or the next day, you'll have to put your name down on the list to borrow the teddy bear. They'll all be gone. Because it works. Teddy bear meditation. Even now it feels so nice having a little teddy bear. Yeah. Because when you have that kindness there, that allows the mind to engage. You haven't got this terrible negativity. Again, most of the thoughts of restless mind just coming from negativity, lack of contentment, just really fed up. 3 days, how many days gone? 3-4 days gone, how many more days to go? Nothing's happening. Oh God, do I have to endure all this chanting and all this lining up and all these old jokes which I've heard so many times? Do I have to keep enjoying this for such a long time? And the answer is yes. But with happiness and fun, and it just makes the mind very light when you put a teddy bear on your lap, when you meditate. It relaxes you, makes you peaceful, makes you kind. So when you start to watch the breath, surprise, surprise, you find the breath is so much easier to watch. It's nice, it's beautiful, it's cuddly, which means you can sustain your awareness on the breath. So we start with being aware of the breath. The next stage is actually basically to sustain that awareness for a long period of time without effort. Not that you have to hold it, it's just there. It doesn't go anywhere. Why doesn't it go anywhere? Because you're having a good time with the breath. It's friendly, it's nice. And that is an important stage of the meditation, because once you have sustained awareness on the breath, your mind is just so light. It doesn't have much work to do. You know what it's like in life, you have to juggle so many different things, and many of the things you have to use your brain on are just such difficult problems. Trying to find an answer to this and a solution to that, that really works the brain, and it gets tired. To be able to watch the breath go in and out is such a simple thing to do, which means your brain doesn't use hardly any energy at all, which means it all goes into what I called yesterday the knower. Mindfulness, awareness, the knowing starts to increase, and you start to see more. Now comes one of my similes, which I have to say at every retreat, because it's a great simile and it makes a powerful point, and I haven't found a better simile to make the same point. And that is the journey up Kingsbury Drive to this place or to the monastery. I have been living here now for over 32 years now, 32 and a half years, Bodhinyana Monastery. And when I first came here, it was about 7 years until someone gave me the chance to walk up the hill. Before, you'd always go up and down in a car, in a vehicle. And it happened that one day, I forget exactly what I was doing, but went out for some early morning appointment, and came back, and there was plenty of time to walk up that hill and still make it in time for lunch. So I asked my driver, let me out the car, I'm going to walk. And even then it's just so difficult for a monk to get exercise. They said, no, we'll drive you. I said, I want to walk. No, it's my privilege to drive you. No, I want to get out. It's really an argument sometimes. Actually, it reminded me of these old stories. That there was a famous monk in Thailand called Lumpur Dur, and he had the same experience. People were driving him back from some dana, and came about 2 or 3 kilometers from his monastery. He said, I just want to walk from the rest of the distance. He said, no, venerable sir, we're going to drive you. You can't walk, you're too senior, you're too important, we won't let you walk. He said, stop the car, I'm going to walk. He said, no, we insist, we'll drive you back to the monastery. And then he said, you do not know me, do you? And then the car stopped, broke down, and he got out and walked. Don't argue with monks like that. They do have some powers which they use to stop the car. But anyway, I didn't need to use any powers. The driver was happy enough to let me get out of the car, so I started walking up the hill. It's quite a steep hill, but it's not any 2 kilometers, then it takes half an hour. But it took me much longer, not because I was unfit, because something happened on the journey. As I was walking, it was a beautiful spring morning. It wasn't too hot. The sun was out. And I couldn't believe how beautiful the valley was. And I looked in there and, hey, I started seeing things I'd never seen before. You know, rocks, trees, just the creek in the bottom of the valley. I'd never seen that before. And I thought, what's going on? I've been living up here 7 years, going up maybe 3 or 4 times a week. How come I'd never seen this before? And also, it looked very nice, much more beautiful than I remember seeing through the window of a car. And it was so delightful, I stopped. And then it changed again. When I stopped and stood perfectly still, that hillside just, it was amazingly beautiful. I saw things I never expected to see, the lichen on the rocks, just the shape of the trunks of all those trees and bushes. And the colors became more intense, you know, greener than I'd ever seen it before. And the grays on the rocks and the lichen, and oh, it's just incredibly beautiful. And I sort of wondered what was going on. Did somebody put some drugs in the tea I had before I got in the car? What was going on? And it was so beautiful that I started to contemplate what's happening. And I used just basic science and realized that when you look through the window of a car, even if it's not going that fast, 40, 50, 60 kilometers an hour, you look through the window of a car, the light which gets into your eye and hits the back of the retina has a chemical reaction, and then that forms the image which then the mind starts to interpret. But when you look through the window of a car, the light doesn't have enough time to complete the chemical reaction, so the colors aren't fully formed, and there's not enough detail there. It's just too fast before new light hits the back of the eye. You have to see something new, and another new thing, and another new thing. The images flow so fast, you can't develop the colors and the detail. You miss so much. But when you get out of the car and walk, because you're going slower, the light has more time, a better image is formed in the back of your eye, your brain has more time to actually examine all of that, the colors are more rich, more fully formed, you see more and it looks more beautiful. But nothing beats perfect stillness. Because when you're still, only then do the colors fully form. The greens deeper than you've ever seen before. Blues, greys, incredibly powerful colors. They're not like pastel washed out anymore. They're not like one of these t-shirts which we've washed so many times, most of the colors gone. This is fresh, bright, clear, pure. And the detail which you manage to see when you're still, everything in that image is fully formed and all the detail emerges from the picture. Beautiful, complete. And of course, the simile arose. That's life. Most people live their life like looking through the window of a speeding car, always rushing to the next thing, going so fast that we think we know what's out there. We think we can feel, we can taste, we can know. But you're going too fast. You hardly see much of the detail. And what you see is actually all washed out. But when you start going slower, you come on a meditation retreat, you're going much slower than ordinary life. You find you see more, you feel more, you hear more deeply, you taste the food becomes more delicious, and you can know much more what's going on. But not just more detail, but what you see, what you feel is deeper, more beautiful. The colors become brighter, clearer. The sounds become incredibly intense. All that is doing is you're going slow. So those sense impressions become fully formed. And that was a great experience for me, realizing that this meditation, when you go slower, you don't only not just see more, but you feel more. It's more beautiful, more happiness, naturally you just get happy because you're getting going much more slow. Everything is more beautiful. The senses are now working properly. So when you're watching the breath, that's what happens there. Because you're not doing very much, you're going really slow, the breath starts looking really delightful. You see the whole breath, so much detail in just one breath, and it looks so beautiful. You can look at that breath hour after hour, just watching the breath go in. It doesn't just go in, it starts. It's like the birth of a breath, like the start of a universe, not really a big bang, much softer than that. The first little bit of air starts to come into your body. You feel that birth of the in-breath. You feel it build up as your lungs draw in more of this life-giving energy. You feel it coming into your body, into your lungs, reaching its peak, but still wanting a tiny bit more until the lungs are full and it stops. You have this wonderful pause, giving the lungs a chance to absorb that oxygen. And it pauses, and until the body tells you it's time to breathe out. And first of all, just a tiny out breath, and then building up to the full exhalation. And then, like most other things, it fades away slowly as it has its death. Slowly fading away until the last little bit of air, mostly carbon dioxide, just goes out of your body. And the out-breath is complete. And there's this great pause. You breathe out. You don't need to breathe in yet. The pause of nothing. Nothing is happening. Stillness. Contentment. Satisfaction. The body is at ease. Until the first part of the in-breath comes again. Incredible number of sensations just in the beginning of an in-breath, let alone just one whole breath. You can see this now because you're going slow. Like I could see more of the grass, the little flowers, the bushes, the marks on the trees. You could see much more when I started going slow. You could see much more of the breath. And because you're going slow, it becomes more beautiful. And this is a natural progression. This is not something you do, something you aim for. Right, now I'm going to go and do this today. Ajahn Brahm told me about this, now I am going to do it. It never works like that. You just get in the way. The path is, but no traveler on it is seen, as I said last night. If you travel this meditation path, you're going to get frustrated. If you let it happen, you're going to bliss out. So you let it happen, and you just notice that this breath becomes very delightful. You can see so much of it. You're really making great headway now. You're going deep into the lotus. The ordinary breath has opened out and you're into this delightful breath. The deeper you go into the lotus, the more beautiful and fragrant are the petals. You're just going inside. It happens naturally. You don't decide to do it. It just develops. And there you are, just watching this delightful breath, which I always call the pivot point of meditation. Get there. And the rest is all just so automatic you can't resist it. Except, yeah, well, you can resist it, that's a problem. But it's totally automatic from there on in. Delightful breath. You're having a great fun. It's joyful. You're sitting here and just you don't want to get up. You want to miss your breakfast. Because who cares about breakfast when you're having such happiness and joy in the meditation? You don't want anything. Just carry on sitting here. And because you're so joyful and happy, basically you can't feel your body. You don't know what's going on around you. Just like I mentioned, that couple, they're enjoying the movie so much they didn't notice a burglar right behind them in the lounge room of their house, having such a wonderful time. So instead of having a wonderful time watching the movie, you're having a wonderful time just watching your breath go in and out. It's far more refined, so the joy is much more delicious. You're just watching the breath go in and out, so delightful. Don't have any understanding about time. Also, your body starts to vanish. Can't feel the body. Why are you feeling the body when you have this beautiful breath to watch? Now, for those of you who have aches and pains in your body, and you know you can't sit very long without moving this or moving that, or you've got an itchy nose, or you've got a cough, or you've got a headache, or whatever, If you can get into that stage of meditation, just watching the beautiful breath and everything else disappears for hours, you think, oh my God, I've been meditating for 3 hours. I'm not going to be able to get up. My legs haven't moved. You're going to have to take me to an ambulance, to hospital. Now I'm going to... But you'll find an incredible thing happens when even that stage of meditation, when your body vanishes, it heals itself. And it gets so relaxed, there's no aches or pains anywhere. I'm getting old now. If I sit for half an hour, especially like when I give the talks, you get up afterwards, it creaks. You know, you just had to put some effort to get up. It's a bit sore because sitting down for an hour giving you a talk. But if I, instead of talking to you, I meditate and get a nice meditation, you sit for 3 or 4 hours, you get up afterwards, no problem. Your body feels so loose, so energized, not an ache or a pain anywhere in the body. Maybe now is the time to tell the story of the monk in Sydney, who, as maybe some of you may know him, because there's a few people from Sydney on this retreat. Maybe some of you were there at the time. Ajahn Sujata told me this story. This monk, he was teaching a 9-day meditation retreat. And just like the one here after the orientation, not here, it was in Sydney, after, you know, saying what you're supposed to do, getting your rooms and getting sort of something to eat first of all, first night. Then they all came in to the hall, half an hour meditation, followed by the first talk on a Friday. Fortunately, you can't really say, but when the half an hour came up and the monk was supposed to ring the gong and start the talk, the first talk on meditation, he never rang the gong. He just kept on meditating and meditating and meditating. 9 o'clock, still hadn't given a talk. Half the people said, this is enough for me. They went to bed and they just left him there. A few people carried on. But maybe, I don't know what time, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, everyone left except the monk, just meditating there. When they got up in the morning, he hadn't moved. He was still there, meditating. Came down for breakfast. He never got up. They went all for breakfast. He just sat there. Came for the morning talk. He just sat there. He didn't move. Lunch, he just sat there. For 8 days, he just sat there. Never went to the toilet, never ate anything, not a glass of water. Just for 8 days. He never gave any talk. When he came out of his meditation, apparently he said, sorry. So I never really meant to do this. I just got into a deep meditation. I really apologize. I gave you no instructions. I didn't tell you how to meditate. And apparently all the people who saw that said, no, that was so inspiring to know that that can still be done these days. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And of course, after 8 days of meditating, not going to the toilet. How many of you haven't gone to have a poo for 2 or 3 days? You feel so constipated you get sick. That's 8 days without going to the toilet. That's just not even urinating for 8 days. Can you do that? Oh, sometimes even a couple of hours. Sometimes after I give talks, you know, people come up with questions. I say, please be kind. You know, I'm a human being. I need to go to the toilet as well. Because I have to be hold it up sometimes. Especially places like Nolomar on a Friday night, you're sitting there, you just had a cup of tea before you come in, and people ask you all these questions. I need to go to the toilet, please. Now, just one more question. you've heard my story. Some of you haven't heard the stories. This was a classic. I was teaching in Hong Kong, and you know, Hong Kong was quite cold, so you don't perspire as much as in Australia, so you need to go to the toilet more regularly. There I was in Hong Kong, giving a talk at the Jockey Club. And after the talk, so many questions, about two and a half hour session. And then afterwards, I got up, couldn't get out of the auditorium. There's a line of people. They caught me on the way, asking questions on meditation, sign books, have a photograph. I needed to get the toilet. And it took me about an hour from getting up off the stage to get into the toilet. But I finally made it. I really was bursting, needed to go. And I got into the men's toilet at the Jockey Club. And as soon as there was one man, he was just finished washing his hands. He said, oh, Ajahn Pong, I want to ask you a question on meditation. Oh, no, not even in the toilet. My God, escape. And that actually happened. It was really funny. Yeah, it hurt. You know, I had to sort of do a bit more restraint. But it was a great story to tell other people afterwards, so I didn't really mind so much. So anyway, there we go, that if you are meditating, you don't feel any pain, aches at all. In that stage of meditation, the body just really relaxes, heals itself, which really gives you a very good insight into where these aches and pains come from anyway. The body can relax and heal itself if given half a chance, but you never give it a chance. You're always in control of this body. You let it go, you just go off and watch your meditation and just really relax. You don't even know the body's relaxing. You haven't got a clue what it's doing. You're just deeply inside. But the body just heals itself and it's just so wonderful afterwards. So anyway, you get into this delightful meditation stage. And of course, as a teacher, I can't give you anything except just those beautiful experiences. And when you have that delightful meditation, meditating an hour, couple of hours, really peaceful, that makes me really happy. That is your gift to me. If you just get that much, that's enough. But of course, the rest comes afterwards. It's a natural phenomena. You're just watching that meditate, that beautiful, delightful breath. It gets more and more delightful, more and more peaceful. You don't intend to do this, it just happens. You're going deeper and deeper into the lotus until the delightful breath, layer of petals, opens up. And what's inside it? These beautiful lights. The nimitas. That's just what happens. First of all, sometimes people get very interested when they go to the deep stages of meditation. Because you want it so much. The ordinary types of meditation, you don't pay much attention. But as soon as I mention nimittas, I see everybody's eyes really pay attention. Nimittas, yeah. So when those nimittas start to happen, just first of all, sometimes the nimitta sort of comes up, but it's not really come up. It's like the layer of petals, it's half open, hasn't fully opened yet. So you can still see the previous layer of petals, and you can also see the ones inside the nimitta. Still feel a little bit about the breath. Doesn't really know to fully open or fully close. That happens so often. People say they see a nimitta, but they can still feel the breath or even feel some in the body. What should I do? What's the answer? Nothing. Just make peace, be kind, be mindful. That's all. Stop messing around. Keep the instructions all the way through. Don't change. Now I've got nimittas, now I'm going to start to control them and make them happen. Can't wait. I'm a busy person, got to get enlightened by Sunday. Or like some people have leaving at Sunday lunch or Sunday morning. Like the nuns have to leave Sunday morning for the ordination. So you've got to get enlightened quickly. You haven't got all day Sunday, you've got to get it by Saturday, okay? Don't ever think like that, because that just makes everything just too tense. Instead, it starts opening up. You can feel the body, that's okay, just leave it alone, see what happens. If the causes are right, the petals fully open, you see the beautiful light. If it's not the right time now, they close up, you go back to the beautiful breath or some body awareness. It's just, you can't rush these things. It's just what happens or what doesn't happen. The only thing you can do is to make peace, be kind, be gentle. Carry on doing that and you're fine. Be content, easy, satisfied. Oh, I saw a nimitta. Only for a second. Well done. You saw a nimitta. Oh, that's all I ever want. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Buddha. Buddha, I saw a nimitta. Little old me, I got a nimitta. I never thought I'd ever see a nimitta in this lifetime. Thank you, thank you. People like that get jhanas. So content, easy, satisfied. People who said no. I got first jhana last time, I want second this time. And if I don't get third jhana, I'm going to another teacher. So demanding. So instead, like, be really content and happy with whatever you get. And you find that then those little nimittas, they settle down. The lotus opens up fully. And you can see these beautiful, beautiful inner petals. Now, what is a nimitta? These nimittas, these lights which appear in the mind. Now, first of all, some people close their eyes and they can see a light when they first close their eyes. That's not a real nimitta, that's a physical phenomenon, so don't really pay too much attention to that. Except if you just had a great meditation all morning and then you close your eyes, you go back pretty quickly. But I'm talking about just the ordinary person. First light you see when you close your eyes is just physical, so don't really pay too much attention to that. But if it happens when you're really peaceful, you feel the mind's really peaceful, really still and quite happy,
Then if lights come up, they are nimittas. And now one of the strange things about nimittas and meditators in today's world, which says much more about meditators in today's world than in the nimittas. People would always come up and say, well, I saw a light, but it couldn't have been a nimitta. You know, it must have been the sun shining or someone with a flashlight or a headlight. No, it couldn't have been a nimitta. And people keep saying this again and again and again. I investigate it and say, look, that was a nimitta. It was. But what really shocks me is why people have got such a low self-esteem. They feel, no, not me. I can't get nimittas. But you can. Even like people have got such a low self-esteem, they think, ah, no one can get enlightened these days. You know, maybe in the time of the Buddha, but not these days. The chances are, what are you talking about? Of course you can. You're human beings. Now you've got all the good karma, so of course you can. Every lotus has got the beautiful things inside of it. But people get so lack of self-esteem, they think they can't do it anymore. And in fact, this is for some of the Vietnamese people here. I was told by the monks in Vietnam that, I don't know how many years ago, they had a big meeting, and they decided, all the monks decided not to teach jhana to lay people. They banned it. They thought, you know why? They thought it wasn't possible. Lay people, come on, a waste of time. And there's only like monks like me, rebels, and I like being a rebel, you know, ordaining bhikkhunis, doing other rebellious stuff. But maybe I should be more of a rebel. Should I? Have I done my rebel stuff already? Okay. But anyway, so I decided, yeah, why not? Why not teach jhana to lay people? Time of the Buddha, people got jhana, why not now? So I got into trouble. I got into trouble for many things in my monastic life. And that was one of them, teaching jhana to lay people. I was told off for it. Don't do that. Until there was one monk, I was in England once, in one of the monasteries over there. And I was going into the reception area of one of the monasteries. And this monk literally grabbed me by the shoulder and pulled me aside. And he looked around. No one else was inside me. He said, Ajahn Brahm, thank you for teaching jhana. And then he ran away. I always remember that. It was crazy. It's like I was distributing pornographic material or something. I was teaching meditation, for goodness sake. But the nice thing is that, you know, you do this and it works. People get the jhanas. It happens. So Vietnam is great now because, you know, they allow monks to teach whatever they want. So lay people can do that now. Why not? So anyway, it's a stupid thing about thinking that people can't do these things, but sometimes the problem is with you. You think you can't. And that's one of my jobs too, to bring you faith in yourself, in your own abilities. I'm not talking about faith in the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. That's another subject altogether. Faith that you can do these things. If you think you can, then you will. Obviously, if you think you can't, there's a big wall between you and the jhanas or the nimittas. Once you realize you can, then you do. So, you know, people do have these beautiful lights come up in the mind, the nimittas. Unfortunately, sometimes they don't know what to do with them. So this is actually where you can get the instructions from. What do you do? Absolutely nothing. But it's nice to actually know what happens, so you know that nothing is going wrong, this is natural, this happens. Sometimes those nimittas come up, we've got what I sometimes call the firework nimittas, which is a good time to talk about firework nimittas, because those who don't know, it's Australia Day today, it's a public holiday, and there'll be fireworks tonight. Fireworks in all the councils and the great cities of Australia, and fireworks here in Jhana Grove in your nimittas. So tonight, to celebrate Jhana Grove, I expect fireworks in your head. You know, I went to a fireworks display once. The Fo Quang Shan group, that's the one in Taiwan, they're holding a Buddha's birthday celebration in Supreme Court Gardens in the center of Perth, and they had fireworks display. And, you know, I hadn't seen a fireworks display in years. And it's supposed to be entertaining, you're not really supposed to see it, but because I was there helping them with their celebration, giving a little talk, doing some chanting, I stayed back to see the fireworks. First time I've seen fireworks in years, and it looked so similar to some types of nimittas. You know, that particular firework which explodes up in the sky, and this light comes out and then stops with a nice beautiful circle. But wow, that just reminds me of so many of the nimittas I experience. You know, in the mind, it comes out and then just stops. With the real fireworks, though, it just fades away pretty quickly. With the real nimittas, it goes out and stops. And just in the black sky, it was just so nice watching that. I say, wow, you know, that's a lot of similarities. Not exactly the same as nimittas, but a lot of similarities. So the firework nimittas are the ones which don't last. Bang, and then they disappeared again. And they come back again. Whoa, that was powerful, but it doesn't last. The firework nimittas. The reason is because you're not still enough yet. You're actually reacting to them. Maybe you can't see that you're reacting to them because the mindfulness is not strong enough yet, but you react. And the two ways you react to nimittas are either excitement or fear. In fact, there's many more ways you react, and there's a whole sutta on that, 1-8 Majjhima Nikaya, the Upakalesa Sutta, which talks exactly just about nimittas and nothing else, about the problems with nimittas. But the big ones are just excitement and fear. Wow, nimittas. Oh, I got a nimitta, I got a nimitta, da 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 da. Ooh. It goes when you get excited. So you've got to be very peaceful. Don't change, just a nimitta, that's all. And the other one is fear. Because those nimittas are very powerful, very strong. And I love telling this particular part of nimittas, because both of these things happened to me in the early stages of my meditation career. These nimittas can sometimes be so bright. See this light in your mind? I mean, it's really powerfully bright. They're brighter than watching the sun in Australia at noontime. And straight away you see this. And I thought, I can't carry on like this, I'm going to go blind. And then, you know, you open your eyes. Absolutely stupid. This is not seeing with your physical eyes. It's seeing with the mind. You don't go blind. You can be as bright as you want. And you're perfectly okay. So don't worry if it gets incredibly luminous. Just leave it alone. It's great. No bad side effects at all. And the other one, which is much more fun, I hope you have this problem. Actually, better you don't if you get passed upon, but I hope you experience this, is sometimes you get so pleasurable. Some of these nimittas came so blissful that the idea came up, the fear, no human being can stand so much ecstasy. You can't stand it, it's just too great, too much pleasure. I'm going to explode. That's a nice problem to have. But then, I found a great insight. When it comes to pleasures of the mind, there's no limit to what you can enjoy. You don't go crazy. You don't explode. You're just very happy. So you can take as much mental pleasure as you want. Just please endure it. You have to just put up with the ecstasy. Which is great fun. So it gives you an idea what's happening. So excitement or fear. The other part of fear is you're out of control. Every time you try and control it, it just all falls apart. You realize you are not doing this. You are disappearing. And that's one of the scariest things for a human being, for you to disappear. When I was young and born in a Christian culture, they said the scariest thing you could ever happen to you is that the devil would come up to you and say, I have come to take over your soul. If that ever happened now, I'd say, you're welcome. You've got a bad deal, devil. There's nothing in there. There's nothing to take over. But letting go of control is the scariest thing which a human being can do. It takes a lot of faith. And the only reason why you let go of that final bit of control to allow those nimittas to settle down is because it's just too nice.
later on, just I describe the personal experiences between the nimittas and the jhanas. Sometimes it was like, you know, you can get into the jhana if you really want. It's just right there for you. But you don't want to. It's too scary. Too powerful. You have to vanish and disappear. You're not ready to let go of such control totally. You don't know really what's going on. But it's so blissful. I'm so afraid. But it's just so nice. But oh, I don't know. But it's just so... And then you just go for it. Just the joy, the bliss, the profundity just draws you in against what you think is your common sense, which is just fear. The fear is overcome by the joy. Otherwise, I don't think anyone could do it. That's why the joy is an important part of this meditation. It's just too joyful, you just get sucked in. You let go of your will. So the nimittas, I went a bit too far there, going from nimittas to jhanas. But when the nimittas come, all you need to do is just to leave them alone until they become stable. They're not moving at all. Oh, there's one other problem which happens so often to people with nimittas. The nimitta is not central at first of all. It's up in the corner somewhere, or up the top, or someone was telling me it was just above them somewhere and didn't know what to do. It is just like, and it's only a simile, it has its limitations like all similes. It's like this nimitta is checking you out. Are you ready for me? So it hasn't come fully in, it's just on the edge there, peeking at you, you peeking at it. Are you ready for me? And if you go looking at it, it just runs away. If you just leave it alone, okay, nimitta, you can come if you want, you don't have to. You know, you have this beautiful contentment, easily satisfied, peace is the most important thing. You're enjoying yourself anyway, so nimitta is just like a bonus. Just leave it alone, don't even do anything. Just make peace, be kind, be mindful. And then the nimitta comes and centers itself. So for goodness sake, don't go moving and looking for the nimitta. It will come to you, just like the carrot comes to the donkey. And you just stay there. And it's very satisfying, much more important than the breath, much more beautiful. And the other thing is to allow it to sort of grow in intensity. So it becomes more and more beautiful, more and more bright. Don't worry about its intensity blinding you. Don't worry about the bliss exploding you. This is what's supposed to happen. Just enjoy. Something that powerful is very hard to make peace with. We get too afraid. We have to really have a lot of letting go to make peace with something that intense. So that's why I sometimes say that this path of meditation is just like going to school, university. You have to pass one exam before you can go into the next year. And then the next course, you pass an exam, then you can go to the next stage of the course. And these are all examinations in letting go. You've got to let go enough just to come on a retreat. And you have to let go to sit down. So you pass those two tests, you can sit down, maybe half an hour, 45 minutes, and actually to really get some peace in meditation, you've got to let go of all the pain and the tension in the body to relax, so you can sit for reasonable lengths of period. You've got to let go of controlling your body, leave it alone, let it rest. Then you'd have to let go of controlling your mind to get some peace in the present moment. Then you've got to let go of the breathing to be able to watch the breath and allow it to get very beautiful. And if you've done those tests and you pass it, you get the prize of this beautiful, delightful breath. Then you've got to let go of the breath to see the nimitta. You've got to let go of the controlling of the nimitta and basically most of your will for the nimitta to get very bright. If you pass that test, still, you're not messing around with this nimitta, you're just watching it still. And then it gets brilliant and bright, and then you have to let go of this sense of self to go into these jhanas. Every stage is a test. And the test is how much you can let go. And you get a prize of every time you pass the test. Deeper peace, deeper stillness, deeper happiness. And it feels profound. So it's not just happiness for happiness' sake. You know, that you feel that this is something really important. You learn so much from this. And I will say about the insights coming soon. Next time I give a talk, probably I may say a little bit more about the jhanas, but the insights which come all the way. So when these nimittas come, don't be proud of them. Don't think, I got a nimitta, I got a nimitta, you did na 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 na, I'm much better than you are. These are stages of letting go, not attainments. It shows you how much you've disappeared. Which is one of the reasons why people who really get nimittas, they don't go boasting about them. That's actually destroying them, not understanding what they are. This is what happens when you vanish, when you disappear. The path is, but no one on it is seen. No traveller on it is seen. You let go, and all these things happen to you. And that's the most wonderful part of this path. That's why anyone can experience this, because you don't have to do it. You just have to stop doing things. And that is an ability which everybody has, but which they don't usually exercise because of fear. So when you overcome that fear, you let go, all these things happen to you. And it's like just being on a journey, and these things happen to you. This is finish off with Ajahn Chah's great simile of the mango orchard. Many of you heard this before. I've told a few people in the interview time. One of Ajahn Chah's, if not the best simile of Ajahn Chah. That's how much I revere this simile. Didn't understand it at first. He said his monastery was a mango orchard. All the mangoes were planted by the Buddha. Every tree is thousands of ripe, delicious mangoes, enough for everybody. But, he said, the problem is, there's so many delicious, sweet, ripe mangoes. The problem is that if you climb the tree, you'll never reach the mango. If you get a ladder, and ladders aren't tall enough to reach the mangoes. If you shake the tree, mangoes never fall. If you throw things up at the mangoes, they won't fall. There's only one way to get those mangoes planted by the Buddha, and that is to sit underneath the tree, perfectly still, emphasizing perfectly still, and then open your hand, and a mango will fall in. That's what Ajahn Chah said. I thought that was absolutely stupid, crazy. Who is this? Has he ever seen a mango tree before? It never happens. And I often say, if it did fall, I thought this at the time, if I sat under a mango tree, it would be hours, maybe days before a mango fall. The birds get them first. And if a mango did fall, it's more likely, knowing my luck, to fall on my head than in my hand. So that was great. It's interesting. I forgot about that simile for years. I just rejected it as stupid. I didn't understand it one bit, but it lodged inside my consciousness somewhere, in my memory. And years and years and years and years later, when meditation started to take off and things started to work, they came back to me. Wow! That teacher, I never understood at the time, but he had this ability of planting these things in your head. You never truly forgot them. They came back again. And that was just incredibly precise. You have to sit perfectly still, and opening your hand is opening your heart. Kindness, letting things come in. The donkey opening its mouth so the carrot can come in, but has to stand still. And then all these incredible things happen to you. So that's what happens. Meditation, remember that. You start to see nimittas, sit still, open your heart, nothing more. Don't do anything more. Shaking the tree, climbing the tree, throwing things up, getting a ladder, getting a cherry picker, nothing would work. But sitting still, opening up your heart. And all these things, they just fall in. Nimittas, Buddhist nimittas, wow, great fun. Those mangoes are so sweet. They just fall in your hand, don't do anything. And then jhanas, first jhana, second jhana, wow, it's incredible stuff. Enlightenment. You don't go and make it happen. It just falls into your hand. That is the path of the Buddha. Brilliant. Maybe you haven't got enough wisdom, effort to do anything, but you can always let go. That's why in the time of the Buddha, there's a
craziest people get enlightened. People who couldn't even chant. People who were hunchbacks. People who were prostitutes. People from all different types of life became arahats. I don't mean you don't have to have a university degree. You don't have to be the tough guy, the Olympic athletic meditator. You don't have to be able to endure pain and be really strong. No. Anybody can let go. So, I expect some results by tomorrow. Everybody enlightened? No, I don't. So anyway, if you want to try a teddy bear meditation, lots of teddy bears here. There's lots of choice, big ones, small ones, and all sorts of other weird ones. In your lap, meditate, and I guarantee you'll have a much better meditation. So please give it a try. This is not just a joke. This works. Very good. Okay, three sadhus. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good. Well done. Thank you, Teddy.